Welcome to the SG Engage podcast, where it's all social good all the time. Sit back and relax as the brightest minds from across the social good community engage with trends, big ideas, and best practices to help you drive impact.
Hey everyone, I'm Rachel Hutchison, and I have the honor and pleasure of leading corporate social responsibility for Blackbaud, and I've also had the honor of getting to know Danielle over the past, maybe 5 or 6 years. We've crossed over in the world, and both really share a passion for pro bono, skills-based volunteerism, and that actually leads me to my first question in talking about pro bono volunteering partnerships that work, which is, let's just start with the basics of terminology. There are all sorts of things that this can be called. You have volunteer programs, day of caring, skills-based, pro bono. How do we think about the construct of all of those? Can you explain a little bit?
So within the context of volunteerism, I think it's actually a pretty simple division. There's the dedication of time, which I consider the days of caring, the hands-on, the traditional volunteerism, and then the dedication of time plus talent, which is skills-based and pro bono, and we can split hairs in terms of the definitions of skills-based and pro bono. At its core, skills-based is about translating any talent, expertise, superpower, whether that's carpentry or painting or marketing, to a need that a social change organization has. And pro bono programs are really used within the context of companies. The legal profession really perfected pro bono and thinking about service as a part of a business portfolio. But I'd say it's really at its simplest and most elegant, just thinking about either the time or the expertise donation.
Yeah, and so we offer both at Blackbaud. We tend to call it skills based, but that's just because that's the term that resonates with us. But we try to offer both options for our people. So, how can pro bono be a strategic resource for social change?
So I think, and I'm biased, but I think pro bono and skills-based is our most strategic philanthropic asset, and it is largely dormant right now. Right? There are companies like Blackbaud who got it early on and have really integrated skills-based, but for the most part, we really think about philanthropy as transactional, as donation, as check writing, and that's changing for sure. But one of the fundamental challenges that pro bono solves is the social sector's capacity gap. Nonprofits spend about 2 to max 8% on functions that we think of as really critical: operations, strategic planning, talent and leadership development, technology, everything that we know as business professionals help grow, scale, refine businesses. Nonprofits are essentially running on fumes, and companies resource that in spades. And one of the things that's so, not to sound trite, but transformational about pro bono is you're not just providing a resource, solving a problem or a band-aid, but you're actually really transferring the skill set from the private sector to nonprofits in a way that they have a real need.
It's really an investment of a different kind.
Yeah,
and it's much more fun. So can you give us some examples? So what kinds of things might be in a pro bono volunteerism kind of toolkit or array that a nonprofit might want to tap into?
Oh my goodness, there are very few skill sets, actually, very few projects that don't translate between sectors. So marketing, technology, operations. I mean, there are some places where some sector translation is helpful, like finance and accounting, right? Where there's actually a couple of different structures, but core competencies are the same. The most popular models that are out there right now are team consulting models, whether that's a single day or a longer term, where it's mostly corporate pro bono, where teams of employees from companies help with a defined nonprofit challenge. There are increasingly popular is the subsidized consulting, where you'll work with a consulting firm and they'll charge you as a nonprofit for 20 hours of work, but give you 60 hours or 80 hours of work. And that's pro bono. That's measurable value. And then finally, the individual model, right? And this is where I think there's a lot of power in skills-based volunteerism, getting, just tapping into your networks and figuring out the individuals who have the specific skills and competencies that nonprofits need. And so board service is certainly a part of this. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking about your volunteers in a new light is a part of this. And increasingly, there are advisory models that are more formal, where, you know, someone who has expertise in a specific area or has experience in a specific area will be at the other end of the line when you need support as a nonprofit. Feels informal, but can be really impactful.
So you and I have talked a good bit about how much I like the kind of individual model. When right. you're in a company that's not huge, that doesn't mean you can't do this. You know, you have people who really care about a certain cause, they get involved. And if they go in with their eyes open and their ears open, they start hearing things that make them realize, I can bring you expertise and skills that you aren't even asking for yet.
Right.
And I'm identifying. It's like, just go to a couple meetings. You'll figure out how you can help them. And often people will think, well, I'm this type of professional, i.e. I'm in finance or I'm in whatever. But you're at a meeting and they're talking about how they don't have any social media guidelines. Well, your company has them. Like you have access to all these different
right.
resources and knowledge of how things are done that you can tap into and share. People become way too literal when they think about
absolutely.
The skills.
Absolutely. And actually, the single biggest hesitation that we see from potential skills-based volunteers, so they don't think they have something to contribute. And that notion is evaporated the moment they sit down with an organization and realize how many resources and templates and expertise and experience they're working with, even if it's not something that's black and white and on paper that they would be able to name themselves.
I did a talk a couple of years ago to a group of leaders at Blackbaud, and I said, if you're in this room, you're pre-approved.
Right.
You have so many skills that, you yeah. know, just accept. So talk a little bit about the benefits to the organization, but then also to the employee of doing this kind of work.
So there's so many. The three, when we're thinking about it from a corporate and nonprofit perspective, we think about the social impact for sure, both the immediate deliverables that nonprofits are getting and also the long-term outcomes. We've done a couple of studies that just demonstrate that the fundraising capability, the program efficiency, the staff efficiency, the increased program reach are 6 months, a year out, just phenomenal. Talent development, these are natural professional and leadership development, even if you don't try. And when you try, when you shape it, when you craft roles in a specific way, it's one of the best experiential learning programs you'll get. But there's something about taking an employee out of their comfort zone, putting them in a nonprofit environment where you are asked to solve problems with less or no money. And the functional skill development, the professional and the workplace skill development are just phenomenal.
The creativity and innovation, too.
Yes.
So I'm right. very envious of IBM's Service Corps, mm-hmm. which is hard not to be envious of. But
Standard.
Tell young professionals who want to step up and learn in their careers, go get on a committee or get on a board of a small nonprofit and try out your leadership chops and just learn. And you'll grow and invest in yourself so much that's separate from your role. And do that while you're young. And they said, no, I have to be like important before I do that. It's like, no, you're already important.
Right.
Go do it now. It's such a gift to them. So if we have a company or an organization that's looking to implement a program like this, what are the first couple of things they need to think about?
The three sets of goals that we ask companies to think about when we're sitting down and shaping these programs is, what philanthropic or mission issue are you looking to solve? What are you looking for from an employee engagement perspective, right? Are you looking to engage your high performers? Are you looking to engage the folks that are harder to engage? What's your mandate there? And then talent and professional development. What are you looking to build up as a competency within your company? And it becomes pretty clear then what the program should look like and who should engage. The hardest piece, and this gets to kind of corporate readiness for pro bono programs, is how do you connect the HR and the talent development to the philanthropic, the CSR, the foundation folks, and get them bought into a program that achieves both goals. Because still right now, while they're starting to connect a little bit more, those are usually two pretty separate functions within companies, and within skills-based, they are both paramount.
So what about the nonprofit side?
So nonprofit side, there are the immediate outputs, the activities, the deliverables that a nonprofit gets, right? A new database, a new strategic plan. And then what you can try to do with skills-based, usually pretty effectively, is connect that to scale and growth of the organization. What we try to do with nonprofits within pro bono is hit them at a point where skills-based volunteerism will really support a trajectory for them. And so thinking about how do you expand to new regions, or how do you put food in the mouths of more hungry people, or how do you get more tutors into an educational program? All of the infrastructure that you're building can be pretty solid lined, connected to some of those outcomes. And I have more that we could share with the audience that gets pretty granular around measurement of outcomes, which is something that we're all as a sector right now trying to move from outputs and activities to outcomes. And particularly with skills based, it's the outcomes that are the most powerful, because you can leave a skilled day of service or a skilled engagement and know exactly what you got out of it. But it's not until, you know, usually about a year later where you see the real impact of it.
So I want to circle back to success and success metrics a little bit later.
Yeah.
But first, let's talk about, this is the really hard part, the partnership. So how do you find that secret connection of the right company, the right nonprofit? And I know this is what you live and breathe every day at Common Impact. So how do you do that?
It's an art and a science, as all relationships. We often think about personal marriages as we're thinking about pulling together.
I talk about board service like a dating service. Like
exactly.
We're going to find a date. You're going to see someone who you want to go have coffee with at Starbucks. And then we're going to see if you like each other, i.e. the goals kind of match what I'm interested in. And then maybe you'll date for a while.
You got
and
it.
And then maybe you'll get married, which means going on the board. Like,
right.
But you shouldn't get married without talking about, like, do you have common goals and interests, and what are you looking for?
And so many.
And a lot of it's very, like, it's hard to make it a system. Because you've got to have this chemistry.
Right. And so many companies and nonprofits get married before they've even gone on the first date.
Exactly.
Right. And
that's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. Has anyone ever done that? No.
I hope not.
Right. No judgment if you have, but it's a bad idea. So there's an inherent power dynamic that exists within these relationships. And I think that's why the marriage counseling is really important. And so that's a role that intermediary organizations can play, and that really companies can play, because nonprofits will often say yes to a corporate skills-based offering, even if they don't need it. And so as a company, ensuring that you are committed to an honest, trusted partnership is something that we always say you need to come out of the gate with. And nonprofits, as they're thinking about engaging, sometimes because they don't have necessarily the expertise on hand that they're looking for, that's part of why these skills-based engagements are of value, is to really understand what outcomes they're trying to inform, right? Not coming to the table and saying, we need this version of marketing plan, or we need this financial model, but saying, we're trying to grow at this rate and serve this many people, help us think about how to do that, so that you're in dialogue with your potential corporate partner around how they can potentially resource that.
So I have a guess at the answer, but I'd love to hear, why would a nonprofit say yes, even if they don't think the fit is there?
Abusive relationships.
Gosh, we're like really going into relationships.
Okay, we're diving deep.
No, like,
I'm going to come
I'm
back
curious, up. I'm curious, like, why would someone say yes?
If you're not yet a partner of that company, there's a promise of financial investment, right? There's a promise that this company is going to be supportive of you long term. If you already are, it's really hard to say no to someone who is supporting your organization, who has, particularly those that have really healthy partnerships with companies, have the hardest time saying no, because there's mutual benefit that they want to provide. But, you know, in traditional volunteerism and hands-on volunteerism, the version of this is a company will show up to paint a fence that was painted by another company the previous week, right? And that is starting to happen with skills-based as corporate pro bono is getting more and more popular. You know, I've seen marketing collateral that has been developed time and time again as make work for their partners.
So it's like this. They're like going like this to each other. So I've absolutely seen in the where you have a big service day and you're sending all these people out, and I've been sent to sites where it's clear that the nonprofit just felt like they should be involved, but they didn't really know what to do with the 25 people who were standing there. And so like, we're making a list of all the things that we could potentially do. And it's like weeding and picking up trash and things that are not, they leave that person and those volunteers actually feeling very demotivated. Like they're not getting that buzz from really helping. And we actually turned to a system where we started sourcing a lot of our own projects, even if they were much shorter than a whole day, to say, we're going to go help high school kids in communities and schools write a high school resume, or we're going to go do really basic, fun project management stuff with third graders with marshmallows and straws. And, you know, we're going to do things that are actually going to try to do something meaningful in a shorter amount of time. And that's worked a little better, because you want them, if it's someone in the early trajectory of volunteerism who hasn't even thought about giving their skills, maybe they're just sticking their toe in.
Right.
And you're getting them kind of, you know, connected, and you want them to have a good experience, not just, well, that was a waste. I got, you know, I wasn't at work, but that was a waste. That's not what we want. So how do you lay the groundwork at the beginning of a successful engagement? So you found the fit, you have aligned your expectations, your goals, or what you, the nonprofit and the company both want. How do you go forward?
So I think a lot of it is about being clear around your goals and being honest around your goals at the onset. And success measurement is often something that we talk about at the end of an initiative, but it should be, in my mind, the very first thing that is part of the conversation when you're thinking about these partnerships, right?
Start with the end in mind.
Start with the end in mind. And what are your outcomes? What are you hoping to achieve on a very basic operational day-to-day level, but also from a strategic level? And we were talking at yesterday's session about the potential for partnership, right? And some nonprofits will say yes to engagements that don't make sense to them because they see a potential partnership, when the company might be coming to the table to say, this is not a long-term partnership strategy for us. And often that's not true, but being clear around what partnership goals are, what program goals are, right? What are you trying to do with skills-based in general? And then what very specific tactical project goals are is helpful. And then relying, and this is true of broader philanthropy, relying, if you're a company, on your nonprofit's expertise to know how to drive and measure mission and social impact outcomes, because that's something that is usually, there are some broad scale, sector specific metrics, but usually there are pretty meaningful metrics at the organizational level that can tie to the projects that you're participating in. And relying and not being too generic about those metrics has been the most successful in getting people motivated on a day to day. Because one of the things that you said really resonated, which is that if employees feel like they're working on something that's simply an employee engagement activity and it's being crafted and there aren't necessarily nonprofit outcomes that are super visible or super valuable, no way. It doesn't have to be said. You can tell at the table when you're painting the fence, when you're whatever activity it is, and it has the opposite effect that companies are trying to achieve.
Yeah. So you're basically saying, you know, treat this as if you have hired a paid team to do this project with you and agree on where you collectively want to end when you get to the completion of the project, which is a really different way for a nonprofit to think when a service is free.
Exactly.
It's the model of donor and the power of the funder over the organization that creates this natural tension.
Exactly. And we often counsel our corporate teams to think of this as a paid and think of pro bono as a paid engagement, except that paid engagements, paid consulting engagements tend to be pretty transactional, right?
Yeah.
You're hiring a consultant for a skill. They're giving you that skill and that deliverable, and then they're leaving. And that leaves a lot on the table if you're thinking about skills-based volunteerism mm-hmm. and pro bono. So while you should think about the quality of service that you're providing and the rigor of scoping that goes into it as a paid engagement, it can be much more meaningful than that in terms of the relationships that are formed, the skills that are transferred in both directions.
So let's go back to success. You start with the end in mind, which I know Hal Williams has always taught me. Yeah. How do you measure success on both sides? And how do you start so that you make sure that you're going to get those metrics at the end?
So one of the, we have a new website that we launched a couple months ago called capacitycommons.org. And that's designed to bring nonprofits through soup to nuts, how to think about the value of a skills-based volunteer engagements to really measuring its long-term success. And our companies have used that also as a way to support their grantees, their partners. And the success measurement for companies is really in those three categories that we talked about, right? Talent development, employee engagement, which are already built into metrics that companies are usually tracking. There's mm-hmm. system infrastructure, and it's fairly easy to define how employees have progressed from promoter score, employee engagement level, or on specific functional and leadership skill sets. The social impact measurement, and that's where trust in your nonprofit partners and collaboration mm-hmm. with your nonprofit partners really comes in. It's thinking about what mission outcomes are you trying to achieve? What organizational outcomes are you trying to achieve? And my biggest advice on measurement is people get stuck because it feels too big. It feels too hard. And it's actually usually a lot more straightforward than it seems. And just working with a nonprofit to figure out what they're already measuring. There's an organization out there called True Impact that helps think about pro bono measurement. And when you hear their president, Farron Levy, talk about outcomes and impact, it sounds so simple and people are scared of it. And so there are great frameworks out there and we can share with this audience to help provide that measurement framework, but it's really in conversation in the very first discussions you have between the nonprofit and the company.
Yeah, it really can feel like you're trying to boil the ocean. And we've been talking about impact and outcomes for what, like 30 years in the sector. But, you know, Mike Giannone, our CEO, always focuses on pick a couple of things that are really important to you. And you can have other metrics, but if you happen to be doing this and you pick a metric that later you decide isn't the right one, you now know that. And you change it, and you do a new one, and that's where a lot of people, eliminating things actually is really a really beautiful thing. So as we close, could you give us a couple of examples of organizations that do this really well?
Companies or nonprofits?
Let's start with companies. You can add in nonprofits too, but...
Sure. So one of, actually kicking off next week, Fidelity Investments does this really well on both the talent development and the social impact side. They have a hackathon type model where they bring together employees, largely tech employees, but now broadening to finance employees to solve immediate challenges with nonprofits in 4 hours, which is a model I was so skeptical of in the beginning. How could you get anything done in 4 hours? But mm-hmm. it turns out that if scoped well and if you're providing a compass and guidance to what the challenges really are at nonprofits, incredibly impactful mm-hmm. 4 hours. And that translates to scoped projects that their business side takes up. So it's not a volunteerism program for Fidelity. It's a talent development program for Fidelity. Mm-hmm. And they tap their high performers to say, hey, this nonprofit is looking to expand to a new region or a new program and service line. And you are building their strategic plan for them. And you need to listen to them, and they are your client, and this is going to be considered work product, and your manager is going to be involved and mm-hmm. understand and assess. So that's a really great example of a business-anchored program. Another that is really, I hate to use the phrase on the cutting edge, but it feels very much like that, is the Charles Schwab pro bono challenge, where Charles Schwab is thinking about how do we not only impact the single organizations that we're working with, but how do we leverage the deliverables, the thinking, the experiences that are happening in these micro projects and get them into the hands of the full sector. Mm-hmm. So they work to the nonprofit side, they work with the Boys and Girls Club, and they have a bunch of what could seem like pretty disparate projects, a strategic plan, a marketing collateral development, a tech build, but that all chapters are struggling with in some way, and how they think very closely about how do we take what's unique to this particular chapter of the Boys and Girls Club and standardize it and then get it out to the full network so that the leverage of those pro bono hours is so much greater.
That's really wonderful too, because you know organizations tend to think that they're very unique, but there are things that are coming out that they're solving for everyone.
Right.
So I want to thank you for joining us today. It was great. You all can follow Danielle and her work at Common Impact. They have great podcasts, great resources, and always sharing great insights, but also stories of organizations that are doing this well on both sides of the equation. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's always so fun to talk to you. And thank you to Blackbaud for being such a leader in this space and really understanding how small and medium businesses can also be engaged is an important
good is for everyone, not just the big
good
guys.
Good is for everyone, not just for the big guys.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.